Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzschrauber, your host. On today's show, we're excited and honored to be joined by FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai. Commissioner, thank you for joining the show.
Evan, great to be back with you and Barron.
And despite my protest, Barron also decided to join the show. So Barron, thank you for coming.
Thank you for not being able to say no to me.
Yeah, that whole boss-employee relationship, such a drag. So on today's show, we're going to be discussing the Charter-Time Warner merger, which has been approved, but not without a series of onerous conditions. And Commissioner, you actually voted against the merger, but not for the reason that people might think. Why did you vote against this merger?
A good question. So typically, an agency scrutinizing a transaction will determine whether or not it's in the public interest. And if they determine at face value that it's not, they will try to issue narrowly tailored conditions to ameliorate whatever anti-competitive harm they think might result. In this case, however, the agency pretty clearly thought over a course of 100 pages that the deal itself was against the public interest. But nonetheless, they decided to load it up with merger extraneous conditions that I thought went way too far. And in fact, the negative externalities of these conditions, namely the fact that they want to impose them upon the entire industry, suggested to me that this was a deal that just should be stricken altogether. And that's part of the reason why I voted against it.
So that's interesting because theoretically, the companies are okay with these conditions in theory. I mean, they've agreed to them. They could have scuttled the merger if they thought that they were too bad. So let's go through these conditions and tell us why you think they're actually going to be harmful for consumers, even though the merger is not anti-competitive.
And in particular, for our listeners, explain what you mean by merger extraneous.
So typically, what the government is supposed to do, and they certainly do this at the antitrust division at the Justice Department, where I used to work on telecom mergers and acquisitions, and at the Federal Trade Commission, is to attach conditions that are related to the transaction. So if, for example, two companies are seeking to merge in a particular area, the Justice Department will say, well, okay, as a condition of approving this deal, we'll require you to divest one or the other service areas. In this case, however, these conditions have nothing whatsoever to do with the merger. They might be what the FCC's majority thinks of as good policy, but they don't relate to the consummation of the transaction. They are simply sort of a regulatory wish list, if you will, things the agency would like to do apply to the entire industry. But since they have the convenient vehicle of a transaction before them, they attach these extraneous conditions to the deal.
Well, I won't put this word in your mouth, but the word that we use for that is extortion. I mean, it's not fixing problems raised by the merger. It's just saying you got to get a deal through. You know, be a real shame if something happened to that deal you got there. So give us what we want.
And on personal privilege, Barrett, if you read the end of my dissent, you'll see that I did call this ideologically inspired extortion. And I think it's something that has to end. Either it has to end through the FCC exercising restraint, or my preferred solution at this point would be for Congress to step in and substantially restrict the amount of authority the FCC has in dealing with transactions.
And usually the purpose of these merger reviews is to protect consumers from competitive harm. And the idea with mergers, and there's always a big outcry about media consolidation, is that when a company like Time Warner merges with Charter, that will reduce competition. Now, of course, those two companies haven't been competing in the same markets anyway, so there's no competitive harm there. And the conditions that were attached by the FCC don't have anything to do with the fact that it's a larger company. The company already agreed to spin off some of its customers to Brighthouse, correct me if I'm wrong, and that kind of dealt with the competitive issue.
Well, no, actually, all three of them are merging together. So Charter, Time Warner Cable, and Brighthouse would be combined.
Oh, but there was some divestment, right?
There's no divestiture. In fact, to the contrary, one of the interesting things is that there's a condition requiring Charter to build out to 2 million additional locations. In some cases, they're going to be overbuilding, and primarily, they're going to be overbuilding, I would think, in areas where there is not a dominant competitor already. So ironically enough, that concern about concentration that we often hear from our friends on the left is only going to be accentuated by the commission's condition with respect to Charter's build-out.
This is an important point that Hausinger really explained to me. So they're going to be building out. Now, they get to choose where to do it, presumably they're going to build out where they have the biggest advantage. So they're going to build out against small cable companies where they have a lot of scale, the new combined company, in dealing with programming. So they can offer a better deal in the marketplace than the small company can, for all the reasons that all those small companies always complain. So in that sense, I think, is that what you mean when you say that, in fact, that the greater concentration in, is actually going to, in some ways, it's going to increase the overall concentration of the market. And in fact, while it does in some sense introduce competition for those 2 million, it's going to push those customers towards this new larger company.
That's exactly right. And that's part of the reason why in the days since the deal has become public, we have seen groups representing smaller companies like the American Cable Association, which represents small cable operators, and the NTCA, which represents small rural telecom providers, coming out and saying this is ridiculous for the government to essentially insist that a major, highly capitalized company overbuild us and essentially squeeze us out of the competitive marketplace.
Now, another condition that got a lot of play was the imposition that Charter and Time Warner, the new merged entity, only offer unlimited broadband plans. Now, at first glance, that looks like it's great for consumers, because why would having unlimited data be bad? But is there a way that forcing a company to only offer unlimited broadband and not tiered plans that say you have X amount of data per month, why is that bad?
I think it's bad for a couple of different reasons. First and foremost, I don't think the government should be in the business of deciding which business models are allowed and which are not. That's a decision, I think, for the private sector to make. Secondly, I think it's also important to remember that when we're talking about broadband, there's no reason why broadband should be unique in the American consumer experience. Generally speaking, when you go to a restaurant and you order more food, you pay for more food. If you go to a department store and buy more clothes, you pay for more clothes. And bandwidth shouldn't be any different. Additionally, the effect of mandating a all-you-can-eat approach to broadband, if you will, is essentially that internet service providers, Charter in particular, will ultimately end up doing the rational thing, the only thing they can do to recoup some of the costs for supplying bandwidth to those heavy internet users, which is to increase the cost for everybody. And so that's why I called it in my dissent. This is the paradigmatic case of the 99% subsidizing the 1%. The old grandmas who, you know, send emails to their grandkids every weekend, that's how they use the internet. They will have to pay more to subsidize the people who consume a disproportionate amount of bandwidth.
Yeah, and in contrast to the wireless market where I can sign up for maybe 4 gigabytes a month of data. And then when I realize I'm only using 1 or 2, I can downgrade because the carriers are allowed to offer these plans. As wireless increasingly becomes a substitute for fixed broadband, as some people can't afford both, so they might take the wireless plan because it's more in accordance with their low usage. And now Charter is going to be competing with telephone companies and potentially Google Fiber, and those companies will be allowed to offer differentiated plans and Charter will not. So the FCC's condition puts that company at a huge disadvantage. And if I'm a low internet user and I want a plan that kind of matches my average monthly usage, I can't do that.
Exactly. It's a classic case of the government saying your business model shall be X, Y, Z are simply off the table. And it's pretty clear if you look how the chairman has characterized this deal with this particular condition. I mean, he thinks of it as what he's called a competition and innovation zone. So it's pretty clear he wants to export this idea to the rest of the internet economy. And that, I think, is something that would be disastrous for consumers.
And if this is such great policy, and if this is what is necessary to protect consumers, why doesn't the FCC put out an NPRM saying that everyone is now mandated to offer unlimited plans? I mean, why should one company be held to a certain standard and other companies shouldn't be if, as you say, the chairman thinks this is good policy for the whole ecosystem?
That's exactly right. And I think it was just the case of this particular nail happened to be presented to the commission, and the chairman and the majority decided to hammer it as hard as they could. In future months or years, it would not surprise me at all if the majority used this case and said, look, we've already put the camel's nose under the tent. Now it's time for the rest of the body to enter.
What is the history of the FCC imposing conditions on mergers? I mean, has this always been something that the agency has done in its almost 100-year history, or is this a relatively new development?
Historically, the FCC was relatively restrained in imposing these kinds of conditions. We did our basic review about whether a deal would be in the public interest and whether licenses that were issued by the FCC could be permitted to be transferred. Lately, however, in the last couple of years, the agency has really used this particular merger review process as a vehicle for, as I've put it, putting regular regulatory ornaments on the Christmas tree. They did this last year with the AT&T DirecTV deal, mandating that the companies offer, for example, a low-income standalone broadband service at a particular price, something that in the real world we call rate regulation. But in this merger, they went even far beyond that, banning usage-based pricing, paid peering, mandating where the company has to build out, specifying that the company has to report back to the FCC on the latitude, longitude, address, and the rest of the locations to which they build out, having an independent monitor within the company to report on all the company's operations. I mean, now essentially we've gone so far beyond what the traditional merger review process would be that my preference would be, and it has long been anyway, that the antitrust authorities, whether at the DOJ or the FTC, can certainly adequately protect the public interest.
So I guess in voting against this deal, you're saying that the merger conditions themselves are so bad and that this process is so shitty in many ways that it's almost better that even if a deal will allow better network upgrades and there will be some benefits for the merger, just legitimizing this process is will make consumers worse off in the long run.
Exactly. If the transaction had been presented to me qua transaction, then I think we would have a very different discussion. But here, not only are the conditions being imposed upon Charter exorbitant, but the negative externalities to those conditions, namely their eventual application to the entire internet ecosystem, the internet service provider ecosystem, is the only reason why the majority has approved it. And that, I think, is an exercise in intellectual dishonesty that no commissioner should countenance.
I amen to you, and thank you for doing this, because other commissioners, Commissioner McDowell before you, did stand up against conditions on deals like this. But to my knowledge, no one's ever voted against a transaction to protest the way that the transaction review process has become a vehicle for regulation through the merger process. And that's been happening, I think, since about the mid-90s.
Correct.
Chairman Hunt, I think, started that process, and both Democrats and Republicans have continued to abuse it.
If I could just add one quick point about that, it's important for your listeners to remember as well. This is not the result of a deliberate process among the five commissioners. I mean, it wasn't something where we all sat around in the room and decided and voted on which conditions would be approved and which would not. As I pointed out in my dissent, what happens is the companies meet with the chairman's office and the Office of General Counsel, which reports directly to the chairman's office, and they secretly negotiate, or more accurately, the FCC leadership says in Godfather style, nice transaction you have there. It would be a shame if something had to happen to it. And they attach all these conditions, and they explicitly instruct the parties, so I've heard, not to tell anybody, including other commissioners, what conditions are under consideration. And so this process goes on for months. And then at the very end, the deal is presented to us as a fait accompli. This is the deal. Take it or leave it. And maybe a few commissioners in majority might get marginal goodies to add to the basket. But that's pretty much how it happens. So this is not a deliberative process along the lines of the Department of Justice's antitrust review.
So it's another example of the imperial chairmanship. The chairman runs everything, and in this case, just holds a company over the barrel.
Exactly right. And that's not the way it should be.
Do we have any evidence to suggest that the chairman told the CEO of Time Warner that either his brains or his signature would be on the deal?
I certainly have no personal knowledge of that.
But I wanted to get back to your point about the pattern here. It might be useful for our listeners for you to walk them through the other conditions that have been imposed in past deals that fit into this pattern. Like I'm thinking, for example, of when AT&T bought DirecTV, they made in their initial application, in their public interest statement, they made their offering to the FCC, which was that they were going to build out high-speed fixed wireless for 13 million Americans, half of whom don't have any broadband choice at all or option, and the other half of whom only had one choice. And that would have really helped to bridge the digital divide in rural America. And the FCC said, no thanks. We would prefer that you build out high-speed broadband to elite power users, the sort of people who might actually stream over a terabyte of data and don't want to pay any extra for it. So that's one example, but also you might look at, for example, Comcast just upped the cap on their basic data tier to 1 terabyte. In other words, the FCC both in the past has done things like this to get what they want, and it seems to be having some essentially regulatory effect on the marketplace. But what do you see? What examples would you point out to our listeners?
There are several like that. Most notably, the requirement that Charter offer a 30 megabits per second down, 4 megabits per second up, offering for $14.99 per month. And you know, as I said, while that may be a good deal in terms of public policy, or we might want to encourage companies to experiment with offerings like that, the government mandating that a company offer that is an entirely different proposition. Additionally, those speeds and that price level were different from the speeds and the price price and the speed level required of AT&T and DirecTV, which begs the question, well, where did these numbers come from? There's no rational explanation from the FCC about why they picked 30 megabits per second or why they picked $14.99. And that's something that I think it needs to change. I mean, it's got to be, there has to be some rationality to this this kind of process.
I'm glad you brought up that they actually attached the price of what the product would be, because that's rate regulation. And even though the chairman has said we don't do that or changed his mind several times about whether it comes to business broadband, special access, or commercial broadband, there's been a lot of rumblings in Congress about banning rate regulation, because one of the biggest concerns with the net neutrality regulations were that it opened the door to rate regulation. And the only reason it doesn't happen, excuse me, is that we have a benevolent chairman who decides not to, but that doesn't apply to future FCCs.
So it doesn't even apply to this FCC.
Yeah, and would that bill in Congress prevent the FCC from attaching rate regulation through merger review, or would that still be on the table in a rate regulation is banned world?
No, I think it could still be imposed through conditions attached to mergers. I think
even if the bill passed,
absolutely. If the companies voluntarily, and I'm using air quotes here, agreed to it, then I think the FCC could well demand and get a condition like that.
So I guess the only way to solve problems of the merger review process is to reform the process, because even if you ban rate regulation in Congress or you pass certain policies, merger review kind of seems to be in a separate bucket where the FCC can impose conditions despite Congress. So is there a specific process reform that you would recommend to Congress to kind of defang the merger review process, at least to the point where it doesn't become this wish list of policy proposals and goes back to the idea of protecting consumers from competitive harm?
I do think it would be excellent for Congress to get involved in reforming substantially the FCC's procedures and substantive legal constraints when it comes to merger review. With respect to process, for example, imposing a set deadline would help. Ensuring transparency would help.
Maybe involving the commissioners?
I know. This is a radical proposition, but this is essentially where the agency is now. In terms of the substantive law, I mean, the public interest standard is so elastic at this point as to be without meaning. And, you know, as you can see from some of the press releases and the press quotes that the majority has been giving, they view the public interest as a regulatory grab bag that has nothing to do with the transaction itself. So I would rather Congress direct the FCC to apply a very concrete set of standards or guidelines similar to what the Justice Department uses. Now, as I pointed out in my dissent, one could very plausibly raise an objection of redundancy. Well, why do we have the FCC then doing the same thing that the DOJ or the FTC does? To which I would say, you know what? You may well be right, in which case I would rather the FCC be removed from this business altogether, because ultimately the test of whether a particular transaction is in the public interest is what is its effect going to be on competition. And we already have antitrust authorities, professional staff at each agency that have a long experience with doing that. And I don't see any deficiencies in that process whatsoever.
It might be worth pointing out for our listeners here that the whole point originally of getting the FCC in the merger review process was that the companies hold licenses to radio spectrum. So it's not the cable companies that actually are the subjects of the review. It's technically it's the earth stations for their satellites, you know, and the FCC, as I always understood it, was way back when, was supposed to be looking at fitness of the licensee. Had you lied to the commission? Had you violated the indecency rules? And yet that whole regime has gotten ported over into cable and satellite broadband. I mean, isn't that kind of crazy?
It's morphed into the very worst outcome I think public choice theory supporters could ever have imagined. It's quite the opposite, as I was saying, from the DOJ's sober analysis of the facts and the law.
Well, but short of getting the FCC out of this business or changing their substantive standard, there was a proposal back in the House bill in 2012 for FCC process reform that would have at least said that the FCC could not impose or accept merger conditions that were not specific to the harms in a transaction. Now, that struck me as being totally uncontroversial because that's what the FCC is supposed to be doing. And yet, in order to get Democrats on that bill in the House, the Republican sponsors of the bill had to drop that provision in the version that now actually made it through committee, which said to me that there are a lot of people out there that really like having the FCC use such just completely unbounded discretion to regulate through mergers. Given that, what hope is there for real reform here?
I think the hope is frankly dim, given the resistance in some quarters, both in Congress and at the FCC, to requiring conditions to be merger specific. I agree with you that that would not seem to be all that controversial. And I would point out that even if it were adopted, even if it were the law, I'm quite confident that this particular FCC would have no compunction about trying to shoehorn some of these extraneous conditions into the category of merger specific by some means.
And so if you, let's just say that Congress isn't going to pass legislation anytime soon, but let's say you become chairman and you might actually start to involve the other commissioners, just as you tried to negotiate with Commissioner Clyburn. We had Matthew Berry on the show recently who talked about your effort at bipartisanship. But what would you do as chairman about this issue if you couldn't change the statutory standards? How would you make it clear that the agency was no longer going to abuse this process?
My clear direction to the FCC's career staff would be engage in a similar analysis to that employed by the Justice Department. Look at the facts as figured out based on the 4C and 4D documents that the parties submit to the Department of Justice or to the FCC. Figure out what the competitive effects are going to be. Present to me and to the other commissioners a sober analysis, dispassionate analysis of what the effects would be of this transaction. And if there are any competitive effects, if there are any narrowly tailored conditions that could ameliorate that competitive harm. I would like to think that I would involve all of the commissioners' offices early on in the process, at least offer them regular briefings from the career staff where my office isn't minding what the career staff say, because I want them to be able to feel they have a stake in the decision making. Right now, it's a completely different process where months and months of review go by solely under the aegis of the chairman's office, and the commissioners are involved literally for the last several days or weeks at most. After everything has already been wrapped up in a bow.
Last question. As you know, the FCC has taken a very expansive interpretation of Section 706 authority to do anything that, quote, promotes broadband deployment. So when can we expect Chairman Wheeler's investigation of Facebook?
That's I mean, the chairman, to his credit, has said repeatedly, we have no interest in regulating edge providers. But obviously, the track record of promises from the FCC not to do something or not to regulate something or not to investigate something has been relatively poor. So we might have to stay tuned on that one.
And some of the people who are outraged about the Facebook thing, not because they were suppressing conservative news, but maybe just because of their management of the platform, have suggested that Facebook is more like a public utility than a social media company or a newspaper. What do you think about that?
In all seriousness, I think this illustrates the danger of one of the themes underlying the net neutrality debate is that when you start thinking about something as a utility, there's virtually no end to what the average person could think of as essential to your daily life. And you might think, well, I'm always on a social network, so that's a utility to me. But the necessary consequences of that is that the government should get involved in regulating it as such. And I don't see social media or any other technological innovation as the water company or the electric company, something that has to be micromanaged by a government minder in Washington. That's the worst thing for free market advocates and for consumers writ large.
Since Evan asked about 706, I got to ask you one more question. When we read the set-top box NPRM, we were mystified by the FCC invoking Section 706 of the other Communications Act, the 1934 one, which is the war powers of the president. So what the fuck? Is the president going to declare a national emergency here because I have to switch from the Netflix app to the Comcast app? Or did they mean to cite Section 706 of the 96 Act, or do you know?
I think there are two possibilities here. One is that it was simply a mistake. The Office of General Counsel or whoever was reviewing this didn't catch it. But the second is that maybe it was purposeful. The fact that the president himself has uttered the phrase set-top box and wants the FCC to get involved. Maybe there is some connection that we're not aware of. But no, I think it's most likely the former. But that also speaks to the fact that people at the FCC think that Section 706 is somehow this core tenet of the Communications Act. It was never codified as part of the Communications Act. And the way it's morphed into this sort of freestanding grant of substantive authority to this agency without literally any restriction other than the majority's restraint is just mystifying to me. And the former Senator Conrad Burns, who recently passed away, rest in peace, he, I'm sure, would have been mystified that this section that he helped usher into law has been perverted in this way.
And yet no one seems to know which one it is or which act it's in.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for today's show. Commissioner, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and thank you for taking time away from careful bipartisan deliberation to join us and always being kept in the loop. I know that you must be very busy because of that.
Indeed. Back to the scotch.
And of course, Baron, thank you for joining the show and making sure that our explicit label on iTunes is actually worthwhile. So thanks for dropping that F-bomb.
I try. You should hear my brother.
Follow us on Twitter at Tech Freedom or on Facebook.com/Tech Freedom. Feel free to always pitch ideas and guests for the show. Send us an email, media@techfreedom.org. Find this podcast in the iTunes store on your favorite podcast app. And please leave us a review because it will help others find the show. Thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.